Welcome everyone to the evening's meeting. Hopefully everyone can hear me clearly as we are currently in unprecedented times. Can I ask that for everyone's full cooperation and to adhere to the new guidelines with regards to the conduct of the meeting. Everyone should ensure that their mobile telephones are turned off or switched to silent and use of mobile devices for recording is not permitted. Members of the public should not speak during the meeting and may be temporarily excluded for discussion of in-committee items. Members of the public and press must refrain from using the instant messaging facility during the meeting, and anyone found to be doing so will be given a warning. Failure to adhere to the guidelines for a second time will result in being removed from the meeting. I would remind members of their obligations under the Councillor's Code of Conduct to declare any financial or significant non-financial interests which they have in any item of business before the committee today. If you have such an interest, please either declare it now or immediately before the item itself, stating the item of business it relates to. Having declared an interest, members should leave the meeting by hanging up from the call for the duration of the discussion on that item and should not take part in the vote. You will then be invited back to join the meeting once the discussion on that item has ended. The proceedings of the meeting will be audio and video recorded, except where Council is considering any exempt matters. The recording equipment is linked to the microphone system on the computer, so please ensure your microphone is switched on before speaking. Members are reminded that they are personally responsible for any comments they make at the meeting. Please ensure if you wish to speak on an item, use the instant messaging facility to indicate you wish to speak, and I will bring members in as listed. I would remind members to keep their instant messages to the following letters. Type Q if you wish to ask a question, type P if you wish to propose, type S if you wish to second. I'll take in the Q's preferably before the P's and seconds. But if you want to propose and ask a question at the same time, please indicate. Please refrain from making any other comments using instant messaging. In the event that two councillors propose at the same time, the person who proposed the first will be taken as a proposer, and the person who proposed the second will be recorded as the seconder. So thank you, councillors. So cracking on. Any apologies?
Chair, there's an apology from Councillor McAteer.
McAteer, any other apologies? Okay, moving on. Is it okay to move on then? Yep. Any interest to declare amongst members?
No, not for me.
Okay, thank you. So moving on to item 3, the action sheet. So if we go through this page by page, is that okay? So page 1, page 2, Jonathan, do you have a question on page 2?
Chair, I'm on page 4.
Okay, sorry, page 3 and then page 4. Okay, so Councillor Tinley, can I bring you in on page 4? Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Chairman. Chairman, it states there that there's a report will be coming to us, a more in-depth report on the mountain bike trails in Restlever in due course. Now, we were told in June that a full report would be with us at the August meeting. And I suppose my concern, Chairman, is there's the full sort of summer season has been lost there now.
Councillor Tinley, can I just interject and just remind that this was an exempt item in the previous committee? So if we want to get into any detail around the contents of the previous report, we would have to go into committee. So it's just to keep us right.
Well, Chairman, I know that that's sometimes that can be quite an onerous thing to go in and out of committee. So if I could just get an update as to why we didn't have the report today and when we have it, Chairman.
Thank you, Councillor Tinley.
It'll be next month, Councillor Tinley will have it for. We have a bit of work to do around working up the options and getting the costs tidied up, but it will be in September.
All right, thanks, Michael.
Okay. Happy enough. So I think I need a proposer for the action suit.
Propose, Chair.
Thank you. And second, we'll go here by the messaging. So proposed by Councillor Hannah, seconded by Councillor Savage. Thank you. Okay. So moving on, we have a notice of motion to consider. So this is a notice of motion brought by Councillor Enright. Is Councillor Enright on the call?
No, he doesn't seem to be.
Okay.
Well, you're looking for me. It's Len here. You're looking for me.
Then your phone's on. You're on. Councillor Hannah, could he close mute his microphone, please?
It won't mute.
Okay. So, is anybody going to?
If Councillor Enright's not present, he to move the motion. The motion cannot be moved, and it will be dismissed.
Okay.
Sorry, just as the seconder of the motion.
Sorry, he's just actually. Sorry, Councillor Enright is just trying to come on here now, I think.
Okay.
No, he's not. Sorry.
Can an absentee, can someone else bring prepared to propose a motion? Or Councillor Brown, you have a question there?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Councillor Enright currently is having some tech problems and maybe in a bad reception area. So I think he is trying to take part. I can speak to the motion if you would permit, if that's within standing orders, but I just want to clarify if that's not possible. Surely it wouldn't be procedure just to dismiss a motion in the past when proposers haven't been able to discuss a motion that's been deferred until the next committee rather than dismissed.
Would that require an adjournment of the motion?
Under standing orders, I don't have them just to hand here, but it wouldn't be able to be discussed because the proposer isn't there to put it forward. What I can do is try and get Councillor Enright on the phone, and if you wanted to move on to the next motion, perhaps, and then okay. We could move back if I can get on the phone.
Yep, happy to do that. Councillor Hanlon has in with a question. Is it relevant to the motion?
Yeah, I was just going to suggest the same thing, just to maybe if yep. Cadogan is having issues, you know, I think. Given that we're online, it is a bit unfair just to dismiss it.
Yeah, okay. Councillor Savage, is that along the same lines, or are you...
I thought I recalled a previous motion been proposed at a previous committee by a member of the Sinn Féin group because the person who was proposing the motion wasn't there to speak on it. You know, the motion has been proposed surely at the council, at the full council meeting, and it's just for debate, is it not, at this juncture? That's my recollection. I'm not sure if any other council colleagues can recall that, but you know, I would recall at least one occasion where others have spoken to a motion on behalf of their colleague who wasn't able to be there. Sure.
Yeah. Well, I think if we move through. And give Councillor Enright a chance to come back, and then we'll take his motion later. If that's suffice. Okay. Next motion, Councillor Casey, do you have a question?
Thank you very much. Are we okay by standing orders? That's the most important. That's the key element. Or are we just going to make this up as we go along?
Well, no, I don't want to make it up as we go along, but. I do want to allow Councillor Enright a chance to get in. If it's not in, we'll cross that bridge and we'll come to it. Is that okay to move on with that then?
I'm happy enough if he comes at some stage before the end of this. Maybe, yeah. Okay, I'm fine.
Okay. Moving on to item number 5 then, which is another motion from Councillor Clark. Councillor Clark.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Taking a bit on the words there, just writing stuff up. The motion, as I read the motion at full council, so I'll just talk to the motion then, Chair. The reason for the motion, I think it's evident, for environmental wardens to be to investigate environmental wardens to be provided, mainly for our tourism hotspots in around, right across the district, where we have a number of areas that have come under increasing pressure, as we're all aware. So I'm not going to get into that detail. But I think we're not providing the service, and that, what I include in that is all the statutory bodies, you know, the likes of the Forest Service, the likes of the council, but also in regards to, you know, other partners such as the Moran Heritage Trust, the National Trust, and a number of other agencies out there. You've got the environment agents through DERA, you have the tourism sector, you know, so there's a number of partners who need to come together with the council, and we need to investigate how we're going to manage these areas. We have a number of enforcement council or enforcement officers in council, but they're not adequate to do the job, as we all saw in regards to the likes of the Bloody Bridge, the likes of Brainsford, the likes of Tollymoor, the likes of all the main pinch points in the Mourns. You know, we're not managing tourism in a sustainable manner, and particularly in COVID-19 and coming out of that, where people want to be safe and feel safe, there's an onus on council to lead the way in regards to providing an adequate environmental warden system at them locations. And obviously that's going to cost money, and I suppose how we come up with a solution in regards to that. I would like to see a coordinated response or a cohesive response from all them agencies coming together, and a discussion how they will maybe contribute to the employment of a number of environmental wardens. Now, that could have many guises. It could be full-time, part-time workers. It could involve part-time people from the local farming community, for example. Could give a couple of hours or whatever. You know, we could have volunteers. We could have ambassadors. There's a number of different aspects to providing environmental wardens. So basically what the motion is doing is asking for that to be investigated. And as we move forward, we've a number of strategies been rolled out. We've a car parking strategy where we have a number of car parks in the area who are providing resources to the council. But there's also within the strategy, we're looking at making tourists pay for car parking in these areas. And all our a lot of car parks across the district, there is free parking at these areas, which is causing its own pressures because people sit all day. But the revenue generated from the likes of that tourism hotspot car parks could be used to manage them car parks in a sensible manner, which is taken away from the annoyance of local residents and making the area a lot safer, because it's the local residents who are suffering the burden with people parking up their lanes, causing litter, damaging their property, damaging livestock, endangering livestock, smashing glass, urinating, and other issues in or around their land. So I think there's a real onus on us to start looking at this in a coordinated fashion, and then bring back a paper to the ERT committee. So I'm happy to leave it there, Chair.
Thank you very much, Councillor Clark. I think Councillor Hannah is in with the question. Councillor Hannah, do you want to come in?
No, first, sir. I think it's Councillor Hanlon.
Oh, is it
Councillor Hanlon? Councillor Hanlon, can't she? She's not in the committee, is she? Or?
I'm not looking in, sorry.
No,
I need to be seconded.
Get on.
Okay. So I think Councillor Hannah is in. Thank you, Councillor Hannah.
Chair, Councillor Clark's happy enough. I'll second the motion. So, well, it's just a question there, maybe for Wally there, just a wee bit of clarification. I think it's just looking to scope until if this is possible. Would that not sort of, if we're looking for environmental wardens, would that not sort of be part of Roland Moore's department to a certain extent, because it's going to sort of double up and work? So it is, you know, and other parts departments would have to be involved in this too, would they not, Wally? Would it not involve changing some of the bylaws, because it's really up the mountains and it should be more in heritage? I know there's hot spots all around the place, Wally, but it's just...
I mentioned all them organisations need to be involved in looking at the solution. That's what we're looking to scope it out. But I wanted more than just a talking shop. I want a real solution to this, and options brought back to the ERT committee and ways to move forward, along with costings.
Now, I'm happy enough with that one. I'm happy to second that, Sam.
Thank you very much, Councillor Hannah and Councillor Clark. And I think you're right. It's possibly not up for Councillor Clark to answer their questions. It's Councillor Clark looking for an options paper to be brought back. So if Councillor Clark has proposed and Councillor Hannah has seconded, and I'm not seeing any other indications on anybody wishing to speak on said matter, are we happy to move on to the next item?
Yep.
Is that okay, sir? Is that us on the next item 6?
Yep.
Okay, item 6 is a motion from Councillor Brown on universal basic income. And I think Councillor Brown and Councillor Chenner are here on the meeting, so I'm going to invite Councillor Brown to speak on his motion. Councillor Brown.
Great, thank you, Chair. So the motion reads as follows. In the wake of the economic crisis caused by the coronavirus pandemic, this Council recognises the need for a reformed, fairer welfare system that protects everyone in society. It recognises the need to provide economic security for all and invest in people to protect livelihoods and kickstart the economy. Therefore, it calls on the Department of Communities and Finance and the UK Treasury to design and deliver a Recovery Universal Basic Income, or UBI, for Northern Ireland. Additionally, this Council supports in principle the investigation of a full permanent UBI for Northern Ireland, recognising the need for a radical overhaul of the welfare state and the positive impact this would have on poverty alleviation, inequality and mental health in particular. Council will commit to producing a plan for how a pilot of a full UBI would be implemented within the district and formally expresses its support for said pilot. So, a universal basic income is a fixed, regular amount paid to every resident in an area, regardless of their circumstances. It would replace the vast majority of work-related benefits, means-tested benefits, and would provide everyone with a basic level of financial security to fall back on, ideally on or just above the poverty line. The current welfare system in Northern Ireland is not fit for purpose, and a UBI would be the fairest and least stigmatising way to replace it. Many parties criticise the current welfare system, and UBI is the most prominent alternative being talked about today. It is not a new idea and has been around for centuries, but has gained prominence in recent years as a result of pilots in places like Finland, Spain, Canada, and soon hopefully in Scotland as well. Where it has been tested, it has been found to have either a positive or neutral impact on people's likelihood to work, and may in fact remove some of the poverty traps and disincentives to work currently found in conditional benefits that we have at the moment. It has consistently greatly improved the mental health and well-being of recipients. However, it has gained extra momentum in recent months as a potential solution to many of the adverse economic impacts of COVID. UBI advocates across the UK have called for a recovery basic income to deal with the impact of the pandemic, and these calls have been supported by over 100 MPs from 7 different parties. In the midst of the pandemic, it was also backed by most Northern Irish parties, including the First and Deputy First Minister. And whilst more targeted schemes have since been announced by the government in the form of the furlough scheme, grants and increased access to universal credit, these still leave potentially millions of people unsupported across the UK. A recovery UBI would make sure that everyone gets the support that they deserve.
A recovery basic income, which some have suggested could be around £1,000 a month for working age adults and half that for children and pensioners, would help rebuild household finances, help restart the economy through stimulating consumer spending, and help build resilience into the economy in the event of future crises. A three-month UBI of this sort, for example, would cost less per person than the furlough scheme is currently projected to cost over a similar time frame, and it would cost much less than the 2008 bank bailout did. In terms of paying for it, a substantial UBI like this could be funded mostly through the replacement of many benefits, but it wouldn't remove disability benefits, and scrapping the personal tax allowance. It would also significantly decrease the costs of poverty through giving many desperate people a lifeline. And as the government has shown in recent economic crises, there is always a magic money tree when one is deemed to be needed. As well as calling for a recovery basic income, this motion does support the principle of a full UBI for Northern Ireland, something which this council clearly does not have the powers to do itself. However, councils across the UK, including Liverpool, Sheffield, Hull and Norwich, have recently passed similar motions endorsing UBI and calling for it to be trialled in their areas. Local councils in Fife and Glasgow have also been crucial partners in considering how a Scottish basic income trial might work, and they have fed into a Scottish Parliament-funded feasibility study on it. Supporting this motion would not involve council funding any trials, but as trials would happen in a local area, councils can play an important role as a strategic partner in future trials of the idea. They are also an important means of gathering grassroots and local support for new ideas, which can indicate to central government that change is needed. They are also an important means, all this motion is asking of Núri Mórnindown is that we contact the relevant agencies and perhaps some of the other councils across the water who have backed this idea and consider what role, if any, we could play if a localised trial of a UBI became a reality via Treasury funding. If anywhere in the district were to be selected within a series of national trials, something that the Labour Party actually committed to in their last manifesto, it would represent a huge investment into this district. So to clarify, in terms of the substance and outworkings of this motion, there would be no resource implications for the council in backing this motion, except some officer time in sending off a few emails and perhaps bringing back a report on how other councils have been involved in supporting this idea. And finally, just to sum up, the post-COVID world gives us an opportunity to build back better and look at how we can redesign the social and economic contract in a way that works for all. We already have universal healthcare and education, and income, I believe, should be a basic human right as well. Many consider UBI to be this generation's NHS, and I hope council will back this motion and show its commitment to a fairer economy for all.
Thank you, Councillor Brown, and just mindful as well that Councillor Traynor was the original seconder, so I'd just like to invite Councillor Traynor in if he wants to have a quick word on that as well. Councillor Traynor.
Thanks very much, sir, for allowing me this. I know it's within your own discretion in doing so, and I have no right to actually speak. I suppose there's not much I could actually say than Patrick's already said. Patrick is, as far as I'd be concerned, quite an expert whenever it comes to universal basic income, given his own research on the matter for his doctoral thesis. I suppose the only thing I will say is that COVID itself has proven to be one of the greatest challenges of our times. It has impacted many of the families, through obviously the tragic loss of life, but also the economic uncertainty that there are for many, given the decimation of many of the retail sector, transport sector, different industries that have been absolutely decimated. Government has tried to react to the growing needs, but unfortunately many people will still fall through the cracks. It could be said that this is partly the fault of a welfare system that does not focus on adequate safeguards for citizens. So economic stability for citizens has to be key post-COVID and must be the focus for central government and the Assembly. A basic income can provide such economic security, allowing citizens a greater choice over, for instance, the hours they are employed. It can enable carers to balance current and other responsibilities. It can provide a safety net for those who are self-employed or who would wish to become self-employed and start up a new business, and provides possibly greater space for people to become involved in voluntary work or work within the community for social benefit for themselves and for their communities as a whole. It could be an effective tool, as Patrick has rightly pointed out, in reducing poverty, enabling those who are in low income to lift themselves out of poverty, to seek opportunities, develop new skills, to engage in further education opportunities, but also to find jobs that can provide greater income generation for them and the families. As Patrick has rightly said, the current benefit system that we have in place is not fit for purpose. It assumes that every person has a stable single employment, and for many that isn't the case. As we can see, for those within the retail sector who would have been on zero-hour contracts, they had no stability throughout this process. And furlough, as great as furlough could have been for some, for others it just didn't fill the void. And where they were maybe working 40 hours plus on a 0 hours contract, furlough wasn't protecting them. So there needs to be a rethink of how we protect citizens, how we can provide an economic safety net to ensure that people don't fall into poverty and to lift those in poverty out of poverty. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, John. I'm going to propose this, but before that gets taken on, I think Councillor Hannan is in for a question. Councillor Hannan, thank you.
Thanks, Councillor McMurray, and thanks for letting me speak. I don't actually sit on this committee. I suppose I just have some questions, really, about it, Patrick. First of all, in terms of us as the council, we have different powers from English and Scottish councils, so I'm not sure where it sits within here, or is it even within our remit to be discussing it? Surely it would be for the Assembly. And then secondly of all, I do see some of the benefits of basic income, but I suppose one of the things that just jumped out at me, you're talking about a basic income of, for example, £1,000 a month for everybody. So does that not maybe, like, it's going to give more money to the rich and potentially then take away, you know, the very reason why you're wanting to do it in the first place? I totally believe there should be a reform of the welfare system. There's absolutely no doubt on that. But maybe I need to read into it more. I'm just not totally taken on the basic income as you've presented it.
Thank you, Councillor Hannan, for coming in there. I didn't realise you're not in this committee, but you kept it sufficiently succinct that it won't impinge upon anybody else. Councillor Clark, if you want to come in now, Councillor Clark, thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I suppose in principle what the motion's trying to do, you know, I think everybody would agree with, you know, you're trying to lift the most less well off out of poverty. I think the model we're looking at here is going to ensure that the wealthy get more money, and that's our difficulty. That's Sinn Féin's difficulty, and particularly in the 26 counties where it's been looked to being introduced, I think, through the Green Party was the vehicle for that or the conduit for that. Now, what I will say at the start now, there is pilot schemes. None of them are 100% you know, accurate in regards to the outcomes. A number of them are, you know, the small numbers involved in the scheme, you know, or the initiative. So I think at the very least there would have to be a lot more detail and a lot more looking at the, you know, our problems. You know, we've come out of conflict. You know, there's high levels of unemployment and high levels of unemployment of people who've never worked and who can't work and don't feel they will work. So there's a lot of work in regards to even training and how you would use the resource to better themselves. What I would say is citizens in need, as I say, and families in need is the priority. It is a Sinn Féin's view that these families could slip through the net in regards to it. Residents on lower incomes, and basically they will always be lower if you're continually to give the person who has a lot of money or a better start to life, you're going to give them the same money that you're giving to somebody with nothing, with no start in life. So it's like entering a race where somebody's about 100 metres in front of you and saying, listen, we're all equal here, we'll start together, but that's not the case. When somebody has privilege, they may own their own home, they may have a large bank account, they may have you know, a large income on a regular basis. So it's not treating everybody in the same way. Somebody starting off in a poor background will always be worse off. You know, how do you bring people on a similar level to start with and being level in the race to start with? I think that's where the difficulty is, where we find it. Now, the principle is good, don't get me wrong. If we could work towards that, you'd certainly endeavour to do it and still look at pilots, see other initiatives. I think Fife's looking at Dundee, we're looking at it. A lot of Scandinavia, we're looking at it. Scandinavia's incomes are already very high. They get a good standard of living. And I suppose that's another issue. If you introduce people who are wealthy with £1,000 a month and how they spend it, they spend it in luxuries, and that'll drive up inflation, obviously. So that's the danger. You end up with inflation, higher food prices, and then the money that you're giving to the citizens will be consumed within that inflationary new reality. So that's a worry for Sinn Féin as well moving forward. So the British Treasury would obviously be the big player in regards to this, both providing the income but allowing us to modify welfare. And we all understand the whole issue about welfare when we try to protect the most vulnerable in society, where the British government then said, then you have to set up your own welfare state. And the cost of that would have been millions and millions and running into billions. So that's the stark reality. The British Treasury would have to initiate some sort of a change in regards to how they're going to deal with us. Is the appetite there in the current climate? I don't think it is. But as I said, if a proposal comes from the British in regards to that, devolved governments can look at this type of initiative, then certainly there'd be a full proposal, then there'd be a full consultation, and all the political parties and all society be involved in regards to it. So that's in our biggest problems in regards to this, and probably why we can't support the motion in its current format, and not even the format in the current circumstances. That we've always argued for further fiscal powers and fiscal levers within Stormont, so we can look at setting our own tax regimes. We can look at initiatives like Patrick's motion is talking about, but in the current climate, we don't have them levers. We don't have them fiscal powers, and a number of unionist parties don't want the fiscal powers to come to the assembly. So we'd have to deal with a lot of them issues as well. But currently, we can't support the motion in its current format. As I said, the wealthy will be more wealthy.
Thank you, Councillor Clark. I think there was a few questions in there for Patrick. Just conscious that Councillor Brown could probably give very lengthy answers to some of these questions. So we'll move on to Councillor Savage. I think Councillor Savage is in there for the question. Councillor Savage?
Yes, Chair. I see some validity in what Councillor Clark has said. There is a need to ensure that the equality agenda is followed in any pilot, but the key word here is pilot. We're talking about coming up with schemes or encouraging the coming up with schemes that deal with the new reality that is post-COVID world. You know, let's deal with the realities in our own district. You know, at the moment we're looking at approximately the estimate showing 34.5% of our workforce. The second worst affected area in Northern Ireland were impacted by job furloughs or layoffs as a result of it. So on the ground, on a day-to-day basis, I'm seeing people coming in to the office, for me in particular, dealing with the day-to-day minutiae about claiming about their furloughing scheme coming to end. And there's an absolute potential tsunami coming around October time if the scheme is grounded to a halt. So there is a need, and I can see the sense in what Councillor Brown has proposed, to start future-proofing our society. You know, I represent an area along with other councillors. There's 4 of the top 10 deprived areas in our district within Newry City Centre. We're over a third of the population, the working age population, are out of work. And as Councillor Clark has said, a lot of those people, some of them have never worked due to the impact of the conflict or whatever, or the inability to gain employment in their formative years when they were trying to carve out a career for themselves. The bottom line is the current welfare state as it sits, in Northern Ireland and across the UK, GB and here, is not fit for purpose. It hits the most vulnerable in society. And I think we have a duty to start exploring other ways where we pick up those vulnerable in society, we give them a chance in life. We also make sure that, you know, there are people, there are some people at the minute who, prior to COVID, were doing well. They were self-employed people. They were hard-working people. They came from ordinary backgrounds and were doing well for themselves. But all of a sudden, their whole business model has fallen through the floor, should that be in the retail, hospitality, construction sector, whatever it may be. And as a result of that, we have to come up with a plan B. The plan A did not work. The plan A was too vulnerable to something like this impacting on it. And no government can sustain the current level of support that's out there in relation to COVID furloughing payments and grants to businesses. We have to rethink how society and reshape society going forward. And along with that, it's not just about providing an income for people. As part of that all-embracing relook, our review of where we're going with society. You know, it's a disgrace that we are still having to fight tooth and nail for quality housing for our people in the 21st century. And making sure that things that the late John Hume and others campaigned for back in 1969, basic human rights, are not there. And while they have concerns, as Councillor Clark does, in relation to the potential imbalance in this, and I think those are the issues that we need to flag up in any potential pilot scheme that may, if it ever happens, come our way. But I do support, in principle, what Councillor Brown is putting forward. I think we need to work towards a fairer society. I think the proposal as it sits does need tweaking, but under the guise that it is a pilot scheme, I would agree that in all pilot schemes, that's the opportunity to deal with the imbalances and the inequalities in it and deal with it. And on that basis, I would support what he's proposing, because we do need a plan B and we do need to recalibrate society and recalibrate our economy. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Councillor Savage. Councillor Hannah, you're done with the question.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Just a couple of things there. For a start, Councillor Brown, I would agree with the concept of it, but I believe this is a Westminster matter to start with. So it is. But just if you could sort of, it's just hard to get a grasp of what you're saying. So what you're basically saying is everybody should get £1,000, no matter what, guaranteed to you every month. So how do you work with self-employed people? The pensioners are there as well. The whole thing, it's just going to be an expanse of schemes, it is, to be quite honest with you. And I know everybody needs a minimum income, so they do, but I do not understand, Paddy, there, how it's all going to work. I'm self-employed. I have nothing to fall back on at all. So if I stop working today, I have absolutely zero. I don't get unemployment, so I don't even think I would qualify for universal credit. So I really don't understand how it would all work. It's so complex, this whole area, so it is. So if you could just answer them questions to me there, even there, how do you work with self-employed and pensioners at the moment there? I know some of them there, they're trying to live on less than £200 a week, and it's extremely tight for them, so it is. And they do get other help with their pensions. I don't know, this whole area is so complex. At this minute, I think the concept's good ideas, that is, but I don't know if it's ever going to be workable, what you're suggesting. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Hannah. I don't want to get too bogged down in the intricacies of it all, but perhaps if anybody else is looking to speak, if they could indicate that, and if there is possibly a seconder for the motion, and then I would allow Councillor Brown to surmise on some of those points.
Sure, we already have a seconder from the council.
Okay, that's great. Paddy, would you like to answer some of Councillor Hannah's and maybe surmise quickly as well? Thank you. I'm just conscious of time taken up on this matter. Thank you. That's a very complicated matter as well.
Yes, thanks, Chair, and thank you everyone for your questions. I'll do my best to try and get through most of them here. In terms of the Council's powers to do anything on this, I realise it is limited in terms of rolling out a UBI right across Northern Ireland, but I suppose we're expressing our support in principle for looking at these issues and looking at the idea. And we have also, as a Council, often discuss things that are outside of our direct remit, but as a local authority and a place for grassroots democracy, I think it's important that we do discuss a wider range of issues that aren't outside, that are outside our immediate remit. In terms of the £1,000 figure, an actual full term UBI, which is, you know, not what we're directly proposing here, we're talking about a recovery UBI and a trial. It would not be £1,000. That's what people are talking about, a recovery UBI for about 3 months to try and pull us out of the worst part of the COVID pandemic. That has been costed as less than what the furlough scheme is expected to cost and less than the bank bailout. So it is affordable if you look at it that way. And it would go to everyone unconditionally as well. A trial, though, and this is just purely based on other trials worldwide, trials usually tend to target the most vulnerable in society. So they often pick a more deprived area, people who have maybe been long-term unemployed and so on. So trials are actually very progressive in that way, and that's where I think you get the biggest social impact. In terms of a long-term UBI, yes, it would go to everyone, ideally, and it would be less than that £1,000 figure. If you're talking about the poverty line, it's maybe £700 to £800, depending on what metric you use. But the net cost is actually not that high when you take away most means-tested benefits and replace it with that, and you scrap things like the personal tax allowance and bring in progressive taxation, perhaps, to make up the net cost. Things like, you know, increasing income tax on the richest, land and wealth taxes, perhaps. And those would address a lot of the privilege issues that Willie and others have mentioned. And I do think a UBI is not just a handout for everyone. It has to be a redistributive system that also goes some way towards tackling inequality. And I, for one, would only support a UBI that would have that at its heart. But if you look at most of the costings out there, the net cost in terms of once you take away the savings from within the current system, it's actually not a crazy amount. It depends how much you pay that and so on. In terms of Glyn self-employed, yes, they would get it. And I think it's very important for self-employed people because it gives them something to fall back on. But it would also encourage entrepreneurs to take that leap and set up their companies, perhaps. I know when I was setting up my company, having this sort of thing would have been very helpful. I took out a massive bank loan to set it up, and it put me in a lot of financial risk. Luckily, it worked out, but for not everyone's the same in that respect. In terms of Councillor Clark's questions on conflict and unemployment, I do think we are moving more and more towards a post-work world, or at least with work dramatically changed from what we're used to, and there simply won't be a traditional, you know, 40-hour week full-time job for everyone in the future. And, you know, we can't, with automation and everything, we can't just teach everyone to code. And we need to adjust to that reality. The current welfare system just simply doesn't do that and keeps people in poverty traps. And we need to give people the basic means to lift themselves out of poverty. You often hear the term, why don't you pull yourself up by your bootstraps? Well, basic income gives people those boots to get a start. And training simply isn't enough for people in poverty. It's not enough to lift them out. And people are poor, you know, not because of any fault of themselves or lack of education or anything like that, I believe. They're poor because they don't have money. That is the definition of poverty. You know, they don't have cash, period. And that's what a basic income seeks to address. I'm not sure how rich people are going to buy a lot of luxuries with an extra £10,000 a year, especially if we have the progressive taxation. Although I do think it's quite interesting seeing Sinn Féin talk about, be so worried about the macroeconomic inflationary impacts of a basic income, but that's a conversation I'd be happy to have with Councillor Clark or others in more detail some other time. Ultimately, means testing in any form, and that's what we have at the minute, is a means tested system. It creates a stigmatized system. A UBI is the only way to create a level playing field and give everyone an equal start financially, regardless of their background.
Thank you very much, Councillor Brown. Just in order to move this on, it does appear that there's a bit of a not quite unanimous agreement. So I think we'll have to take a vote on this. I'm already slightly confused as to who's on the committee who's not. So if I could propose maybe just a recorded vote just for clarity on what's happening, Sarah, if that's okay. Thank you.
Okay, no problem. Councillor Burgess? Councillor Burgess on. Councillor Clark?
Against.
Councillor Kern?
For.
Councillor Hannah?
Abstain.
Councillor Hart?
Against.
Councillor Hoyle?
Against.
Councillor Larkin?
Against.
Councillor McAteer is an apology. Councillor McMurray?
For.
Councillor Mulgrew? Councillor Mulgrew isn't on the call.
Councillor Mulgrew is an apology.
Councillor Riley? Councillor Riley's on the call, okay? Councillor Riley?
That's a no.
I'll just have to abstain.
No.
Councillor Rahn?
Against.
Councillor Savage?
For.
Councillor Stokes?
For.
Councillor Tinley?
For.
Okay, so that's 6-4, 5 against, 2 abstentions, and 2 who are absent.
Sure, that A for me, that's against. Did you see that?
You can't actually vote because you're not on the committee.
Oh, really? I thought I was.
Yeah, I'll check it now. Louise, can you?
No, Charlie, you're not on the committee.
Thanks very much.
Sorry about that, Charlie. So that was 6-4, 5 against, 2 abstentions and 2 absent.
Okay, so the motion carries then, yes?
Carried, yeah, yes.
Thank you very much. Okay, has Councillor Enright been able to get on?
No, I haven't been able to get Councillor Enright on the phone or via this mechanism.
Okay. So
Councillor Brown, as seconder of the motion originally, can be taken as having given notice of the motion.
Yeah. So that would mean Councillor Brown can be invited to speak on it and then I'll be up to the committee to have to take it on board as to need a proposer or a seconder from the committee, or is it okay just for Councillor Brown to speak on it and then take it from there?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, Councillor Brown, do you want to speak on this motion briefly, please? Thank you.
Yes, you'll be happy to know my comments on this one are much briefer, Chair, as I was expecting Councillor Enright to do most of the talking on this one. But I'll read out the motion reads as, recognising the importance of coarse fishing to tourism and the local economy, particularly in the Coyle River, and noting the proactive approach taken by other councils in Northern Ireland to restock fish on behalf of anglers, this council will commit to fund restocking of fish in line with other council areas, carry out a review of coarse fisheries across the district, and work with DIRA and other councils to develop a best practice approach. Coarse fishing is a vital part of the tourism economy and an enjoyable traditional pastime that adds to the character of riverways and lakes in the district. It is also an important hobby for many residents, one which has great benefits for mental health and well-being. Having spoken with many local fishermen in recent months regarding numerous issues along the Coyle, in particular, which runs through myself and Cadogan's DEAs, it is clear that an area which used to be known as one of the top fishing destinations on the island has been sorely neglected in recent years. Now, this is primarily DIRA's fault, given it is responsible for fishing rights on the river. However, other councils have taken a lead in developing fisheries in their districts, in particular in ABC Council. Since 2001, ABC have been spending a few thousand every year on average to restock fish at Loch Gall, with 12,000 being spent in February this year. And I'm not sure if that suspension has happened due to COVID and so on, but that is what was agreed at a committee meeting in February. It is proposed that this council agree to begin looking strategically at popular coarse fishing spots across the district and develop plans similar to that of ABC and other council areas and bring back an options paper as soon as possible on that to this committee.
Thank you, Councillor Brown. Councillor Clark, you're in with a question and an amendment. Councillor Clark.
Sure, I would second that motion. Councillor Kern, I would second that motion. So would. Yep.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Kern. If I could just take Councillor.
May I second these motions or proposal?
No, Councillor Clark, whenever the floor is yours.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Again, the context of the motion is worthwhile. What the councillor is trying to do is improve the fishery in his area. So you can understand why you'd want the council to intervene in regards to doing that. But every other councillor could do the exact same, and all our waterways right throughout our whole council area. You know, so we have to bear that in mind, Chair, when we're taking decisions like this, because we're setting precedent. And any councillor then can return. I agree, the coil was an excellent fishery, and obviously there's a number of issues that has been stopped, and there has been different issues about seals attacking the fish and eating the stocks and stuff like that. But again, it's a dear responsibility, and if councillors start continually taking responsibility for other government departments, believe me, you're going to get your fill of it, because every government department will allow you to work away at their responsibilities. So I'm just urging caution in regards to moving forward on it, and that's why I would suggest the amendment is, Chair, where it says council, that council will commit to investigating providing fund to investigate provide funding regarding restocking. So that gives us an opportunity that the council will investigate it and bring back an option paper, and that we're not saying that the council will fund it. So I think that gives a degree of flexibility for the council, and indeed for the proposal of the motion as well, and moving forward. But we could also say the same, as I say, in regards to sea angling. There needs huge investment into sea angling and sea angling infrastructure and disability infrastructure for sea angling. Again, in some cases that is a council responsibility, because we've a lot of harbours and stuff, but we've very poor infrastructure for sea angling, and council should be invested getting money in regards to that also. But I'm not going to get into that at the minute. I'll maybe look at a motion myself in regards to sea angling in the future, but that's my amendment, Chair.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Clark. I believe there's an amendment in there. I'm going to take Councillor Hannah in with the question first, and then we'll come back to the amendment, if that's okay. That'd be about right, Sarah, for following up. Is that okay?
You would need to ask if Councillor Brown is content with the amendment.
Councillor Brown, you can have the amendment before we move on.
In terms of investigating it, I think I'm okay with that. I think, you know, the purpose of the motion is to get a paper back so we can make a proper decision later, so that's okay.
Okay, so that's that. Councillor Hannah, do you want to come in?
Pretty much what Councillor Chargett said was what I was going to bring up. There is a resource and application there. There could be quite a bit of money involved there. And I think what Councillor Chargett said is correct. We do need to investigate it before we start committing. And as Councillor Clark said there, the Department of Agriculture and possibly even the Rivers Agency would have a huge input into all this. And if we did go down that road, I would like the Kilkeel River and I would like the Whitewater River included as well. If that there's what Cadogan there is wanting, we can all stick in. I'm sure Willie Clark will stick in the Shimla River as well. So it does open up all sorts of questions here. Where do we stop? So, if you need a second for Councillor Clark, I'm happy to second that amendment, Sam.
Okay, so as it is then, the proposer's happy with the amendment. The amendment's there. and nobody else wishes to speak, can we take that amendment as is then? Are you happy enough, sir, that you have a copy of that amendment?
Yeah, we can get, if Councillor Clark could email it across to Louise, it's just to have the proper wording for the minute.
Okay. But can we move on before that, or do we need to have that sorted out now before we move on?
If you just ask if all members are content, then with the, if you get Councillor Clark to read out the amendment, and then if all members are content with the amendment.
Okay, Councillor Clark, can you come back in and not read that amendment out, and then we can proceed. Councillor Clark.
Chair, I'm going between two screens here. So
right, you're okay. No, you're fine. I know how it can be. Trust me. We've got about five up here.
Well, here. I'm in Tipperary. Just up from Cork, trying to get Wi-Fi sorted out as well.
It's a long way to Tipperary.
So, stop. Right, Councillor Clark, thank you very much. If you want to crack on, that'd be great.
As I say, I want to find it. Sure.
No, yeah, sorry, you're right. Yeah, sorry. Do apologise.
1 minute. After which is this council will commit to investigate funding the restocking of fish in line with other councillors.
Okay, so if all members are content with that amendment.
Are all members content with? There's no dissenting voices? Nope. Okay, and Councillor Clark, if you could email that across. Would that be to yourself, Sarah, or would that be to Miss Dillon?
It's okay. I think we've got it now on the recording as well, so that's fine. Thank you.
So, okay. Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Councillor Clark. Thank you, Councillor Brown. Thank you, Councillor Hannah, and everyone else who contributed to that. Okay, so moving on. Where are we? Okay, moving on to item number 7, which is the Economic Development Strategy, and the reporting officer on that is Mr. McGilley, if Mr. McGilley is there.
Okay, Chairman, what you have in front of you this evening is the draft Economic Development Strategy. Post the election in 2019, the Council agreed that a new Economic Development and Regeneration Strategy would be developed. That was done through a series of consultations, both through the Economic Forum, through consultation and workshops, and then a number of one-to-one consultations with key stakeholders in the private sector and public sector across the district. We also utilised the resource from the University of Ulster Economic Policy Centre to develop the baseline information that's presented in the strategy. I suppose COVID somewhat delayed the process, and I suppose gives an opportunity to review some of the actions and probably in the short and medium term the impacts that COVID would have, and allowed us to realign the strategy. So what you have presented this evening, Chairman, is a summary over covering the strategic aims and strategic priorities of the strategy, and I suppose those are the kind of the key areas. Your three strategic priorities that we are recommending are entrepreneurship, business growth and innovation, employability and skills, and regeneration of our infrastructure and connectivity across the region. And what the strategy then goes on to detail, which is appended, is a series of actions around each of those priorities. Chairman, so the recommendation is that the Council would adopt the strategy at this stage and move forward then to implement through a series of working groups the actions that are identified. What we've identified in the plan is a series of actions, and with that a series of partners who will move those forward, Chairman. So the structure would be that what we recommend is that the forum, the working groups around each of the priorities would meet on an ongoing basis to implement the actions, reporting through to the Economic Forum and back to this committee, Chairman, twice each year. and would pick up on, I suppose, changes within the local economy that would develop through that time. So while it's a document outlining a pathway for the future, it also has flexibility to adapt and change as needs be within within the local economy term. And so the document's fairly detailed and presented there to you this evening, so happy to take any questions, but those are the key recommendations, Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. McGilley. We need a proposer and a seconder, or if anybody has any questions to come in, councillors. Robert, Councillor Burgess, you can just put that in the message tab, please, if that'll be all right. And Councillor Clark is seconding. There we go. Good. Okay. Thank you very much. So we're moving on to item number 8, which is regarding red squirrels, and that's Jonathan, Mr. McGilley again.
Yes, Chairman. As you well know through the committee previous papers, the Ring of Gullion AOMB programme had fairly a main priorities around the development of the red squirrel population within Gullion, Chairman, and what we're proposing here is a service level agreement with Waterford Institute of Technology, which wants to use this as a research project to monitor data on the development of the red squirrel population in the Gullion area and learn and take that learning to elsewhere, Chairman. So it's a fairly small contribution that's within the AOMB action plan. We'd recommend that the council enter into the service level agreement at a cost of £3,100, Chairman.
Thank you very much, Mr. McGilley. Anybody any questions? I can see Councillor Larkin has proposed and Councillor Clark has seconded. Just checking, does it need to be verbal for the issue of the recording, Mr. Mallon, do you know, or is it okay just to go with the message bar?
The message bar is fine. That's a record.
Okay, that's good. Thank you very much. So proposed by Councillor Larkin and seconded by Councillor Clark. Okay, thank you very much. So the next item on the agenda is item 9, the COVID-19 revitalisation programme. And again, Mr. McGilley is going to take us through this. Thank you, Mr. McGilley.
Chairman, this is an initiative that we have been working on with the department for the communities and the Department for Agriculture, the Environment and Rural Affairs, Chairman, where funding from central government has been made available to local authorities across Northern Ireland. This council has received around just slightly over £1 million, Chairman, to be spent in this financial year, largely some into next financial year, really addressing challenges posed by COVID in towns, villages, and small cities across Northern Ireland, Chairman, in terms of for retail services and all the various shops and businesses that are located within our settlements, Chairman. The aim of the programme is really a two tranche approach, where we will deliver a quick tranche of money to businesses now, with a further programme to be worked up between now and the end of September, with those more longer term proposals to how we spend the money moving forward into the latter part of the year, Chairman. The sort of activity that will be funded through the programme is really similar to what we would do in our public revenue schemes around revitalisation, shopfront enhancement schemes, promotion campaigns, a lot of, I suppose, work that's required around COVID. So that might be providing awnings, providing hand washing stations, outdoor heaters and outdoor furniture, possibly upgrade of the front of shops and those sort of activities, Chairman. So what we're proposing is, the recommendation is that we accept the offer from the department and move forward to present to advertise this to the business community in the next couple of weeks with expressions of interest, and then work with our stakeholders in the next 4 to 6 weeks to develop our Tranche 2 action plan. and have that approved as well, Chairman, with the department. So that's a quick synopsis of what the programme's about and what we propose to do, but that's the key recommendations are contained within the report, Chairman.
Thank you very much, Mr. McGilley. I don't see anybody, I do see someone in with a question, Councillor Clark.
Could I possibly say something just before?
Of course, you may. You are going to propose, Glenn. I didn't raise it a question as well.
I've just a question there for Jonathan. I assume this will be for villages. It'll be for small villages right up through there to the city of the district as well. Would that be right, Jonathan?
Yes, it will, Chairman. The difference being that the funding is coming from the Department for Agriculture. They're funding the villages, the smaller villages and small towns. The larger chunk of the money is for the towns with a population above 5,000, Chairman. But yes, it is for all settlements across the region can apply. However, the larger portion of the money will be for the larger settlements, as I'm sure you would appreciate.
It would be very useful. I know there's quite a bit of interest in Kiltil. Is that live now, Jonathan, or is it...
Well, I suppose, Chairman, subject to, I suppose, approval this evening, we would be aiming to get it out, because there has been obviously a lot of talk. It's been a very fast-moving fund. This wasn't even on the table, I think, when we last met in June. This has something that has developed very, very quickly. So the businesses have been calling, looking to find out what's happening. Chairman, the proposal would be we would go for expressions of interest live this week for the next fortnight to try to gauge what the interest will be, what the outline proposals will be, and that will give us some sort of sense of what the demand's going to be versus the fund that's available. Chairman, there will be some of this that obviously the council can spend itself in terms of other activity as well, in terms of the marketing, in terms of making maybe public space available on you know, public seating, public areas more accessible to the public as well. So it's not all about grant going out. There is an opportunity there to enhance, you know, just the wider public realm and public space. But that is the proposal at the moment, Councillor Hannah, to get out this week, hopefully with an invite for submissions coming forward and then application following that towards the end of the month.
Will there be a cap, depending on the interest, will there be a cap on what any individual application can be?
Well, we probably will. It'll depend really on the scale of the applications. And it will be similar to the revitalisation fund. So you'd be anticipating these are going to be relatively small grants. They're not going to be in the tens of thousands or more, but I suppose we'd have to gauge that and bring that back to committee in terms of what comes back with the expressions of interest from the public, you know.
Okay,
to try to get an equitable spread across all of the areas.
Okay. Thanks, Colin. I'm happy to propose, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Councillor Hannah. Councillor Clark, you're in with a question. Councillor Clark.
Chair, not too long. Just to say, you know, this will be a great boost for the local business, the local economy, and will be well received, I'd imagine, right across the board. There's been a lot of interest. People, or a lot of business have been talking to myself. I'm sure all the councillors as well. They've been hard pressed over this past while, so, you know, so they're really welcome at High Street. The expression of interest getting out there very quickly, appreciate that, John. That was mainly my question. I think that's a great decision to get it out there. But it will be a stimulus to assist, and I think it will reinvent the towns and our villages. In regards to, is there an opportunity, John, for collaboration between businesses, maybe sharing squares, you know, in regards to business, or also bins and heaters and awnings and all that sort of stuff, if they came in with a package together?
Well, yes, there is that opportunity, but also we're looking at that from a council perspective, where we would have public space that might be utilised, how we could maybe utilise that better and, you know, encourage businesses to come together to use that as well. So it was that the opportunities out there to be as innovative as we can. I think it's also important to point out, so it's just back to Councillor Hannah's point, is that the Department for Agriculture, Environment and Rural Affairs also has another programme out at the moment as well for rural businesses, and the Rural Development Programme, the Local Action Group, has also an additional programme out, a small micro grant. So there's a lot out there at the moment in terms of, so to try to avoid confusion, we'll make it as clear as possible. But there are other programmes there as well, all in response to COVID. So there's a lot of opportunity at the moment. So it's really about trying to, I suppose, maximise the opportunity and take forward, where those collaborative proposals come forward. How can we react to those as opposed to turning them down?
Okay. Does that suffice, Councillor Clark, with your question? Yeah, I assume it does. Okay, so...
Could I just ask one other thing, Chair? Just to Jonathan. Will the council been reaching out to the businesses that give any sort of help or support?
Yes, well, we will be, obviously the expression of interest is out there. As part of that, we will be offering advice through planning and building control, have offered contacts there that will help businesses. So if you need to put up an awning and are unclear around whether you need planning or not, we'll be able to clarify those. There will be part of the package will support those costs as well. So, and we will work with businesses. Obviously, we have to have some form of procurement, so our officers will be a point of contact there to assist businesses as best they can with as they formulate the proposals.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Councillor Hannan there, you know, the late question. If you could
just a quick question, just in terms of support from the council, would there be any support for actually filling out the forms and, you know, applying for any grants? You'd be quite surprised the amount of business people that actually request that type of help.
Well, I suppose we can assist. I suppose the danger is you can't fill the form out because obviously we have to assess it and there will be a conflict of interest there, but we would be able to steer them in the right direction. We're trying to make it as straightforward as we can, and we will offer assistance and advice as best we can as well.
Okay, thanks, Jonathan.
Thank you, Councillor Hannan. Thank you, Mr. McGilley. So, going back here, I see Councillor Hannan has had to propose and Councillor Burgess has seconded. We took a few questions as well on that. So moving on to item 10, which is the Carlingford Lock Greenway update. And Mr. McGilley is back to report on this. Thank you, Mr. McGilley.
Okay, Chairman, you have the report there which gives an update on where we are in relation to Carlingford Lock Greenway proposal, Chairman. As you know, phase one has been implemented between Newry to Victoria Lock. Chairman, this is, I suppose, at this point we want to note that the formal application is being submitted. Also that a revised business case has been submitted to Interreg around additional funding required to bring the project from Victoria Lock on through to Carlingford, although be parts of it that have already been developed. Chairman, we also recommend that we need to enter into legal agreements around land to allow the project on the northern section to continue. And obviously, and then the other recommendation is that we explore just a few repairs that are required for phase one through the contract that's currently in place, Chairman, for a number of amendments that are required there to upgrade the works at the moment, Chairman. So those are your recommendations. A bit more detail in the report around the progress today, but that's the nub of the paper that we've written to you tonight.
Thank you very much, Mr. McGilley. Councillor Larkin, you're in with a question. Councillor Larkin.
Thanks, Chair. It's just a question for Jonathan in relation to the discussions with the landowners. Have they been progressing and have there been any difficulties or are there any, have any of the landowners sought some sort of recompense or quid pro quo for the allowing their land to be used for this?
Yeah, well, so Chairman, it's like any, yeah, we're in contact with them all. There will be some compensation required, Chairman. That would be funded through the programme. That would be part of the cost, which was always anticipated those would be needed. So, I suppose like any negotiation, some are more amenable than others, but we're confident we can work through those.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Thank you, Councillor Larkin. We have a proposal there from Councillor Stokes, and we have a second by Councillor Larkin. So, Councillor Stokes proposed, Councillor Larkin seconded. Thank you very much. Moving on. Item number 11. Which is the public realm enhancement scheme, and again, it's Mr. McGilley.
Chairman, as part of your regeneration activity for the current year, money was set aside to look at the public realm schemes that would have been funded over the past number of years by the Department for Communities and Council to look to see how those could be upgraded and enhanced, and maybe some, I suppose, for a bit of a jazz up of those schemes could be completed. Chairman, the department has since identified funding and has invited us to submit a business proposal for around £500,000. Chairman, we spent this financial year across those main public realm schemes. Chairman, through our State's Department, works are underway to identify proposals, and Chairman, we are at this point, given the deadline, we are seeking approval to submit a general application to the department and move forward to tender if the application is successful. Chairman, we will bring details back to the next committee around the proposals, but it's fairly fast moving, and the anticipation is that this work will be completed in the current financial year. So we're seeking approval there that allows us to submit the proposal and move forward with the letter of offer and tendering process if required, assuming that the business case is accepted by the department, Chairman. This would be looking at sort of an upgrade of the existing public realm in certain places, maybe doing some more enhanced planting and that sort of stuff. It's fairly low, it's £500,000, Chairman, so it's not a full scheme, but rather an update across the district of those main schemes that have been completed in the last number of years.
Thank you, Mr. McGilley. I think you're right in saying that it's hard to keep up to date sometimes. There's the amount of different wee schemes going on, but it's great to see so many of them. Councillor Clark, yes. Councillor Clark is in for proposal and a question as well. So, Councillor Clark, take your question, please.
Yeah, no, but, Chair, no, I'm happy to propose, Chair. As John said, £500,000, it's not a big sum of money right across the district, but it will be valuable because there's some small areas where it does need improvement, like some interpretive signage. We've in Newcastle, the places where time forgot, the council certainly forgot it, because most of the signs are severely damaged. So them types of signs would need replaced, and there's other interpretive signage right throughout the area. Street furniture and parks may be adjacent to the public realm, such as Islands Park and Donard Park, you know, a bit of tidying up of the street furniture and the footpaths in them areas would make a significant difference. So happy to propose, Chair.
Thank you very much, Councillor Clark. Councillor Savage, you're happy to second and a question as well, Councillor Savage.
It's more just about voicing my support for it, and most importantly, welcoming the fact that this is going to be delivered very quickly and within the current financial year. I know it's a small pot of money, but there's some of the smaller public realm areas that maybe need that little bit of a lift to enhance what has already been done there. I'm thinking of some of the side streets in Uri that have been done recently where maybe there isn't the same planting or there isn't the same furniture on it. But, you know, those businesses that are in those areas all need to see a return themselves for their rates as well. So I would welcome it, and maybe with a focus on within Uri itself, looking at those side streets that maybe wouldn't get the same level of enhanced streetscaping as the main thoroughfares would, but certainly welcome it and would like to see it rolled out as quickly as possible. So happy to second it, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Savage, and Councillor Tinley. You're in with the question, Councillor Tinley. Thank you.
Yes, Chairman, I too welcome this proposal. It's just Jonathan wasn't clear as to exactly where this £500,000 was going to be spent, because there's been quite a few schemes done over the past number of years, so I'm sure that list is not exhaustive.
Chairman, just for clarity, the study areas for this would be Newry, Warren Point, Kilkeel, Ballinahinchdown, Patrick and Newcastle. Those are the main towns that DSE would fund, Chairman, so that'll be that will be the study area.
Yeah, it did mention the urban centres. Thanks, John. Yeah. That's clear enough. Thank you.
Thank you. So just for the record there, that was Councillor Clark proposed and Councillor Savage seconded. We're now on to item 12, Castlewell Forest Park. And again, Mr. McGilley is taking this one. Thank you, Mr. McGilley.
Chairman, what you have there is a report that details where we are in terms of the work that's been ongoing in relation to the DERA application under the for the Castle Rally Scheme and the National Lottery Heritage Fund application, Chairman. They have sort of a detail in there that outlines all of that under the various pieces of work that has been ongoing, Chairman. And I suppose the key recommendations are in section 3 of the report. A lot of them are around noting, but in terms of the main activity, it's around the approval to submit the planning application for the main scheme in the Grange, and also to develop the terms of reference for the advisory group, Chairman. And also approval to appoint, which the DERA works are currently out to tender, and we would be recommending that the council, you know, in due course, once those close and are assessed, that we appoint the most economically advantageous supply team that following the tender process and assessment, subject to that being within budget, Chairman.
Thank you very much, Mr. McGilley. Councillor Hoyle, you're in with proposal, and Councillor Hanson for second, and Councillor Hoyle, if you don't come in with a question there as well. Councillor Hoyle.
It's more of a comment, I suppose, Andy, than a question. Just like to commend, first of all, the work that has been going on in the background. I'm sure you'll agree, sitting on that task and finish board. Jonathan, along with Avian and Gary, Sally, do a great volume of work. There have been a few setbacks over the time of COVID and stuff like that there with the Interpretation Centre. Now, not going to be a new construction build, but the team went back and looked for alternatives and came up with the option of its own conservatory. I suppose just this is a really important project for the area and for Castlewellan, and so vitally important that it keeps moving on and we get that plan application in. Forest Park has been a lifeline for so many locals and visitors in the area, especially this past 3 or 4 months. So it's vital that we continue pushing forward with this, and I'm happy to propose.
Thank you, Councillor Hoyle. Yeah, and you're quite right in all the points you make. And just again, so as proposed by Councillor Hoyle and seconded by Councillor Hanna. So moving on then to item 13. Which is Warren Point Municipal Park, and Mr. McGilley is reporting on this. Mr. McGilley, thank you.
So, Chairman, again, this is another National Lottery Heritage Fund project where the capital works have completed, but the impact of COVID was felt around the activity that was due to be undertaken as part of the programme, again, around, I suppose, particularly the schools programme, some of the student placement and volunteering opportunities. So what's detailed there is the work that's been ongoing to try to get those back up and running with online facilities for schools, and obviously how the volunteering activity can be taken forward, Chairman. So the recommendations are that we work with CAFRI to explore hosting a student placement as part of the project to complete that aspect of the project, and we procure training for volunteers, horticultural volunteers within the park, and also begin to look at the final pieces of some work around the landscaping at the entrance to the park from the front shore, where there had been a problem originally, but the recommendation is that we re-look at that and design a new planting scheme in line with the historic nature of the park, Chairman. So it's an update, and then kind of the key next steps that we're recommending to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. McGilley. I have it down here that Councillor Duran is happy to propose, and Councillor Hart is happy to second, and I take it that is that. So we will move on to the next item, which is item 14, and also concerns Warren Point Baths. And Mr. McGilley, thank you very much.
So, Chairman, this was tabled where we at our last meeting, where we detailed the outcome of the expression of interest process, Chairman. So it was just by way of update. We have been in discussion with the Heritage Lottery Fund and HED, Chairman, so we're progressing those actions around the next steps for the project. Chairman, and we're also exploring then, I suppose, experiences elsewhere and where other models have been used to develop similar activity across Ireland and England, Chairman, to see where these work in other areas and how they've been developed. Chairman, and obviously appreciating the importance of the facility, both, you know, from a historic perspective and also within the local community, Chairman. So that's by way of update, Chairman. So the recommendation is that moving forward, that we look at those other similar projects, but also set aside around £10,000, Chairman, in the budgets for 21-22 to explore this in a bit more detail. As you know, our preferred option had been to go down the private developer route, but that has proved unsuccessful, so we may need some funding to develop this a bit further in the coming year.
Thank you very much, Mr. McGilley. I have Councillor Savage here proposing, and Councillor Ryan seconding, and Councillor Ryan would like to ask a question. So, Councillor Ryan, if you want to turn your mic on, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I was just asked, Jonathan, you say we had discussions with the Heritage Fund. It's surprising because a number of years ago when we approached them about it, they said they had absolutely no interest in it. And what concerns me is that we're going to get into a process that's going to last for a considerable amount of time and we move no further forward with the project. I think it's got to the stage where council can't sit idle any longer. It's an absolute eyesore in Moran Point. It's an eyesore in Carlingford Lock. And to do nothing is not an option any longer. And I think we as a council need to take this on and we need to put a project in place if Heritage Lottery Fund or none of the other funding bodies are able to fund it. But I would be interested, to, as I said at the start, just to find out what their initial response was.
I suppose, Chairman, what we need to do is look, as you say, is what is going to be the end use and work from there back towards how a funder will look at it. The National Lottery Heritage Fund didn't say they wouldn't be interested, but what they were quite clear, or what they've said today, is that any proposal that would come forward would be have to be conservation led. I suppose that's where I suppose the challenge is around making a project sustainable and the balance between conservation and commerciality and making it work for, you know, the project work, so and making it financially viable. So they weren't dismissing it, but they were looking at a proposal, but it was quite clear it would need to come with that conservation-led approach, Chairman. And I suppose that's where it becomes an awful lot more difficult and where there needs to be a lot of thought going into how you do that, if that's the route you want to go. So I think the recommendation here is that we need to explore all of the options, but we need to identify what the council really, what are the options for moving it forward, what does the council really want to do, and then look for the funding as opposed to trying to identify a funder and then run after or try to meet their criteria. I think we probably need to be a bit more led by what the council want to do in the first instance and then look for funding. And I think that's what we need to scope out. We have an outline plan application, but is that really what the council want to do? How do we make that commercially viable or some element of commercial viability to it and take it from that approach, Chairman? So Heritage Lottery weren't negative, but they weren't, no, they were outlining that that's how the criteria, their criteria, what it would be. But they're open to working with us, I suppose, and look at proposals as they develop, and they'll give comment on them. But at this point, it was very much a very general, high-level discussion around what we could do, or what they would consider as what they would consider as a project proposal.
Okay, thank you, Mr. McGilley. Did that suffice, Councillor Ryan? There.
Yeah, listen, we'll let it go through its process, but I would just be concerned that we're getting into a process that just drags on for a number of years with no outcome at the end of it. And I think as a council, we have a project there on what is maybe a realistic project, and I think we'd be better putting our minds to that particular project and moving it forward.
Thank you, Councillor Ryan. Councillor Clark is also in with the question. Councillor Clark, if you want to come in. Councillor Clark.
Yes, Chair. No, I welcome that sort of approach to look at, you know, best practice throughout these islands in regards to, you know, outdoor cold water pools, Lidos. You know, in the current climate as well, they're probably going to be, you know, more sustainable moving forward. There's a lot of cold water swimming, a lot of people involved in cold water wild swimming. So from that point of view, I welcome that because we've the Newcastle Rock Pool as well, and which is in need of major restoration as well. So it's a study like this at least will show how we can make them sustainable. Do we look at, you know, like a council voluntary partnership and moving forward, and how do we make them sustainable? How do we maybe make them all a greater usage, particularly opening them up longer than a couple of months? But that's just from my own perspective in Newcastle, Chair, but I think it's a valuable learning exercise for us as well.
Thank you, Councillor Clark. Councillor Hannah. Councillor Hannah, you're in with a question as well. Councillor Hannah.
A question for Jonathan. I don't think ever these types of swimming pools will ever be, you could put a business case together that they'd ever be sustainable or justify the type of investment there, because I know the rock pool in Newcastle will take a huge amount of money to make it even operationally safe now. What I'm asking you, Jonathan, is would a business plan have to be put in place of some description there before we'd actually go even forward with any sort of progress with it, this at all?
Well, I suppose that would be the crux of it. You would need some sort of a business plan to show how the facility is going to operate and the what are the implications moving forward for the council. But I think what Councillor Rowan's saying is there are other elements to the project that were identified as part of the plan application that can make it more potentially commercially viable. We needed to get into the detail behind that to show that if the council make a decision, they know what the implications are. Is this going to make money? Is this going to cost the council money? And what that's going to be. And based on that, then you look for potential funding sources. But I think that's the crux of it will be putting the business plan together.
But just a question for you then, Jonathan. I'm sure that the Warren Point pill there has some sort of a lesson on it. What we need to do then is actually find out what can be done with the pill there, because I think it's going to be fairly limited what we can actually do with it.
Well, that would all be part of. We've been through that. We've some degree of work done on that as part of the planning approval that's on it currently. So some of that basis is covered, you know. But what the route we had went down was a more private sector approach. This has kind of been that has been teased out, and we're back to looking at what can be done from a council perspective, with the council taking the lead on this. So that's where we are at the moment. So there's a lot of that research is done.
Chair, can I come in there just to maybe add to that, please? Councillor Hannah, the 1 point baths are not listed by Historic Environment Division, so there's no heritage value in their words to the 1 point baths. It's not listed.
Okay, thank you very much. So moving on then, but just for the record, so Councillor Ryan, so proposal of Councillor Savage, seconded by Councillor Ryan on item number 14. Okay, so item number 15, and I thank you, Mr. McGilley, you had a good old stint at the crease there. Item number 15 is the car park in Market Street down Patrick, a business case regarding resurfacing, and this is being taken by Mr. Jackson.
Thank you, Chair. Give Johnny a wee break there. So you have the report in front of you. So members are asked to consider the report and to approve the business case to resurface the access road at Market Street in Downpatrick. Party leaders approved the report, which was dated the 21st of April, and are now seeking committee approval for the attached business case. The cost of this project is estimated to be in the region of £45,000. And we included the £45,000 budget in our off-street car park and maintenance budget during last year's rates process. So therefore, we do have the funds to cover this project. So our procurement process requires committee approval for the business case, so I'm seeking your approval for it this evening.
Thank you, Mr. Jackson. See that Councillor Hoyle is happy to propose, Councillor Savage is happy to second, but Councillor Hoyle would like a question. Councillor Hoyle.
Again, Andy, more of a comment. Maybe there should be a scene, not a page, just for me to like and talk. Happy that this, like, more than happy to say this moves forward. I know from speaking to my colleague, Councillor Hanlon, earlier, like, we are all sort of at the minute encouraging staycations and, you know, like that, want to get visitors into our area. So really important that infrastructure and parking, you know what I mean, is right to sustain that. Especially that, you know, the artisan market is placed around there at the minute as well. So more than happy to propose.
Thank you, Councillor Hoyle. So, proposed by Councillor Hoyle, seconded by Councillor Savage on item number 15. Okay, so moving on to item 16, which is the car park at the Van Road Castle Whelm redevelopment. And again, I think Mr. Jackson is taking this.
Thank you, Chair. Members are asked to consider this report and agree to redevelop part of the Van Road site in Castle Whelm for a park and chair facility. Members are well aware of the car parking issues along the main street of Castlewellan, and the redevelopment of the site in collaboration with the DFA Road Service to provide a suitable alternative for those people that need to park all day and for those commuters who work elsewhere. The redevelopment will create approximately 75 to 80 new car parking bays at the Van Road site. And the DFA Road Service have agreed to work with Council and have agreed to partially fund this project. So you have the full report in front of you. We're not going to go into it in any further detail at this stage. However, the project is to cost in the region of about £120,000 to £130,000. But a committee agreed to proceed with the project. We intend to carry out a full site investigation and then undertake a tender process to determine the exact cost of the works. We included £65,000 in the capital project budget to cover our costs, and as I say, DFI have agreed to cover costs as well. So what I'm seeking Council approval to proceed with the project in collaboration with DFI, and I'm seeking permission to apply for planning permission for a change of use on the site. I'm happy to take any questions.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Jackson, and a good proposal. Councillor Hoyle is in with to propose, and Councillor Hannah is in the second. Councillor Hoyle.
I suppose thanks for that report, colleague. Delighted to see that this has got to this stage. I'm sure, like Andy as well, both of us living in the town, car parking, as you said, is a recurring issue for many years. And I know myself and my predecessor and other Sinn Féin colleagues have been lobbying for a facility like this for many years. Look, hopefully this would go some way to probably displace and, you know, alleviate the congestion in the town with the all-day commuters. But I do hope that Council and DFI will continue to work with the other traders and the businesses in the area, you know, as part of the ongoing consultation with the on and off street park and just in the main part of the town as well. Just a couple of questions. I know there's obviously a plan application, but do you have a rough estimate of time when you think this, you can see this starting? And would it be possible that, you know, Council, along with the CFI down the line, look into expanding the infrastructure, I suppose, in the town to include possibly a bus stop on the Dublin Road site? That is one of the main routes, that 240, which goes from Downpatrick, you know, to Newry, which obviously connects with Dublin. So, and there's quite a few people that, you know, use that in schools and stuff in the area. So it would be good, you know what I mean, that if we could have a bus stop on the Dublin Road, just down, just putting it out there for down the line. And then I suppose the most important thing will be, like, will there be a marketing and a strategy to sell this to the public to ensure that we do get those all-day parkers and commuters that are coming into the town and parking the upper and the lower squares, that we do encourage them to go down to that site and use it for that purpose. But again, happy to propose it, getting to this stage, more than happy. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Hoyle. Item number 16, car park at Van Road Castle Whelm, proposed by Councillor Hoyle and seconded by Councillor Hannah. Items 17, 18 and 19 are deemed to be exempt under paragraph 3 of part 1 of Schedule 6 of the Local Government Act, Northern Ireland 2014. That is information relating to the financial or business affairs of any particular person, including the council holding that information, and the public may, by resolution, be excluded during this item of business. So, if I could have a proposer and a seconder to go into closed session, proposed by Councillor Burgess, just need a seconder. to go into closed session. And Councillor Larkin, thank you. We're into closed session. So we're going into closed session. If I could just wait for the green light of go to make sure that everyone has...
Yeah, that's okay. Press have been removed.
Okay, thank you very much. So, item number 17, Tourism Events and Arts Sector Support Programme, on the proposal of Councillor Burgess, seconded by Councillor Larkin, it was agreed to engage local audiences and visitors and to provide support to the local tourism events and arts sectors over the next 6 months. The available underspend from the Tourism Events Programme and Tourism Events Financial System budget to be allocated as follows. Council will launch a new challenge fund on arts and tourism events, £60,000. 2. Council to relaunch a tourism partnership marketing fund for £10,000. 3. Muir and Moran Down Autumn Concert Series to be produced and broadcast online, £10,000. 4. Council to utilise an allocation of the budget underspend from the Downtown Festival to deliver a programme of art installations and animation in Down Paddock to be delivered through an SLA with Down Community Arts in partnership with Down Paddock Town Committee, £8,000. 5. Following the success of the recent Elfrest with Down Experience at Hurston Newry Market, officers will progress plans to pilot similar events in Newcastle, Down Paddock and again in Newry up to circa £8,000 in each of these 3 locations. Other additional locations will also be considered following the outcome of this pilot. All events and activities will be delivered in strict adherence to the latest government guidelines on the COVID-19 response. Item number 18, Geographical Survey Northern Ireland Service Level Agreement. On the proposal of Councillor Larkin, seconded by Councillor Hannah, it was agreed to approve an SLA with GSNI for a 3-year period, April 2020, March 2023, based on a total budget of £23,581.16. £23,581.16. The SLA will be issued annually and in the 2021 SLA will be issued in the amount of £10,144.29. Item number 19, tender for ice cream provision, that's Leave Gullion Forest Park. On the proposal of Councillor Larkin, seconded by Councillor Hart, it was agreed to proceed with the tender for a service provider for ice cream provision at the upper car park beside the play area at Slave Gullion Forest Park for a period of 3 years renewed annually. And that was the closed session. We just move on. I think someone's got their microphone on and they're doing housework too. I'm not sure if that can be... I think the next item, the next section of items are for noting, so that's item number 20, the Brexit Forum, the Dublin-Belfast Economic Corridor, that's the for noting. Item number 22, update regarding the Enterprise Employment and Regeneration Project, for noting. Item 23, Dara Small Business Grants, for noting. Item number 24, Free Ports, and the attached document is for noting. And item number 25, update regarding the SLP, Live Here, Love Here, is for noting, and MIPIM is for noting, and item 27, plan and performance figures for June 2020 is for noting, plan and performance figures 28 is for noting, and 29, ERT historic action tracker sheet is for noting, and that would conclude the meeting. If anybody has any questions regarding that, if they could take those to the relevant officer. Is that okay? Mr. Mallon, do you bring the...
No, that's okay. I think that's finished.
Okay.
Thanks, Chair.
I think that concludes our meeting. Thank you very much. Councillors and officers, and whether it's down to Tipperary or wherever else you may be this evening, be safe at it. And here concludes the meeting, I think. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Chair.